And ubrun are, literally it means they're fetuses. It doesn't mean fetuses, it means the eggs of the fish. Can only be purchased from a mumcha, someone who is an expert. It's not clear what exactly, the Gemara doesn't say, but one presumes that one is dealing with a Jew here, who fundamentally maybe should have nemanus. Maybe there's some concerns that someone makes a mistake in identifying what these things are, whether they're kosher or not. And you have to get it from someone who's considered an expert. You know, stam a merchant selling it, that actually may not count. But if you get it from an expert, then he says, these are from a kosher fish, then that's acceptable. Now, the truth is, the most interesting thing, I think, that emerges from the sugya is the following. If there is a way of determining by looking at the eggs of a fish, or looking at the guts of a fish, that in fact it's from a kosher fish, that might also mean that if you look at the eggs and the or the guts of a fish and see that they're kosher, that you know that that species of fish is kosher. Which in fact did lead the Balei Tosfos to such a conclusion, a very problematic conclusion, as we'll talk about in a little bit. So let's first take a look at the Gemara and then see what the Balei HaTosfos do. So there are two things: fish guts and fish eggs. Rami le ula le rabi dustoi de minbire. Ula presented a contradiction to this statement. Midkaama rav kirbe dogim the ubron eini kochan ela mumcha. So from the fact that he says that ubron meaning the eggs of fish can only be purchased from a mumcha, that would suggest bichlal de dag tome isle ubar, that non-kosher fish in fact have eggs. V'remini, but there's a contradictory brisa that teaches. Dag tome mashritz, dag tohar matil beitzim. A non-kosher fish gives birth to live offspring, and a dag tohar lays eggs. So, if that's the case, it means that they couldn't possibly, any eggs by definition should be kosher. So you don't need a mumcha. Right? So, but the fact that you need a mumcha means it's possible to have non-kosher fish eggs. And the truth is, from my little research that I've done, it happens to be, again, I don't know if that the breakdown is clear, but animals like fish, like sharks, in fact, do give birth either to live young or they're hatched internally. Whereas most of the fish that we typically associate as kosher species, in fact, do spawn, they lay eggs, and so on.
What about like caviar? I mean, classic sturgeon caviar.
So that's the question. So I don't know anything specifically about sturgeon, but let's take a look at what the Gemara has to say. So what do you do? Because Rav said that there is such a thing as, call it non-kosher caviar, if you would like to put it that way, and yet the Braisa suggests that, in fact, a dag tame is only mashritz. So the Gemara says as follows. Amar le Rabbi Zeira, the first response was, same mikan ubran. Go to the statement of Rav, and remove the word ubar. In other words, just say kirve dagim eina nikachan elamen amumcha. You got to edit the statement of Rav, because otherwise it would be impossible. It would make no sense. Amar le Rabbi Zeira, no lo tisame. Don't remove it. Rav's statement can make sense. Tarvayu mati le beitzim ninu. Both kosher and non-kosher fish do produce eggs. Ela zem mashritz mibachutz vezem mashritz mibifnim. One of them basically hatches outside, and one of them hatches inside. So therefore, if you happen to get eggs from inside a fish, so that could be potentially a non-kosher fish. Once the eggs exit the fish, I don't think they're really easily collectible. I know certainly when salmon spawn, so the eggs are all over the place. You're not going to be able to collect them. The trick is to get them when they're still clustered inside. So keep them there. So now, the Gemara says, Lama li mumcha? Why do you need a mumcha? The mumcha's job is to identify. He looks at this. Oh, this is a salmon egg. This is a catfish egg. What's that? So the question is, why do you need a mumcha? After all, livdok b'simanim. Why don't you inspect the simanim? Look at the eggs, and based upon what the eggs look like, we'll tell you whether they're from a kosher fish or a non-kosher fish. D'tanya ki simanei beitzim kach simanei dagim. Just like the simanim of beitzim, so too are the simanim of fish. So this is a very strange statement. The Gemara says, what are you talking about? Presumably, the simanim and beitzim have something to do with the shape or the color. That's the only distinguishing features of an egg. What does it mean, those are the simanim of a fish? Simanei dagim salkadaitach? What are you talking about? How can you possibly think that? Simanei dagim snapir v'kas keses ksibahu. It's a pasuk in Chumash. The pasuk says, kol asher lo snapir v'kas keses tochedu. It has to have fins and scales. Those are the simanim of a dog. How can you tell me that the simanim of a dog are the same things as simon of a beitzim. Ella, so the Gemara now modifies the statement. Kisimane beitzim, kach simane ubre dagim. Just like the simanim of kosher eggs, meaning of bird eggs, so too are the simanim for fish eggs, for ubre dagim. The eluhein simane beitzim. The following are the simanim of a bird egg. Meaning if you don't know where the egg came from, and you want to determine whether it's kosher or not, so you look at the following simanim. Kol shekoderes va'agugeles. Anything, and it sounds like one side is wide and one side is narrow, which is namely Rosha Echad Kad, Rosha Echad Chad. Chad means sharp, Kad it's not clear what it means exactly. Rashi, I think, says it's the bottom of a jar, which is flat, so it will sit on the table. So in that case, it's Tahora. Beis Rosha Echadim, if both eggs are, both heads of the egg, both ends of the egg are pointy, U Beis Rosha Echadim, are they both flat, Tamea. That's a simon of a non-kosher bird egg. Chelmon mi bachutz vechelbon mi bifnim. If the yolk is on the outside and the white is on the inside, temeya, then it's non-kosher. Chelbon mi bachutz. If the white is on the outside, vechelmon mi bifnim, tahor. I don't know if this means if you hard boil it, then see what happens. I've never, obviously, it's never encountered personally a non-kosher bird's egg. In fact, the only eggs that I've ever encountered were the eggs of a chicken in a box in the supermarket. And once I saw the eggs of a quail before they had been laid, because my students brought me a quail that they had shechted for Friday night dinner. They put the eggs in a separate bag. Suffice it to say, I did not participate in those eggs. But that's just me. I know there are people in this world who will look at that and say, yum. They did that because they had studied Yoredei with me, and there's a simon in Basar B'challah, but when did the eggs change from being Bisari to being eggs, of being part? So I know. Anyway, so that's what the Gemara says. And finally, Chelbon v'chelmon u'raven zebezeh, if the white and the yolk are mixed together, zohi beitzas hasheretz. That's the egg of one of the shratzim, which is certainly prohibited. So what you see from this brisa is, you see from this brisa that eggs have a simon, eggs of a bird have a simon, and the same simon that applied by eggs of a bird can be applied to the eggs of a fish. So I went looking using, Rav Google, and unfortunately it seems like all fish eggs are round. So I'm not quite sure what to do with this Gemara. Species that we know to be kosher, because they have scales, yes, correct, and trout also, they all look the same to me. Looking at them, and so not quite sure what to make of that. But the question remains, why do you need a mumcha? Why don't you just look at the simen in the eggs? Look at the shape of the eggs. So the Gemara says, Amar Rava Kesheni Mochu, when it was crushed, when it was flattened, an imoch can be to be dissolved or something. So when that happens, you can no longer tell the simanim from the shape of the eggs, because the shape has been lost, and therefore only a mumcha can look at it and say, I recognize this is these are eggs from one species, they're eggs from another species. So the truth is, the Gemara could have given there's a larger question involved here. What are the simanim of kosher animals? So we know that when it comes to a mammal, let's say, we know that it's split hooves and chews its cud. When it comes to a bird, there are no simanim. The Torah gives us a list of about 22 birds or so. Those and their subspecies are not kosher. Everything else is assumed to be kosher. There, Chazal have a tradition, and the Rishonim seem to accept it, although it's not the minog anymore, is that there are simanim for a non-kosher bird. And there are like three or four simanim, some of which are more significant, some of which are less significant. If the bird hunts, that might be simon. If it splits its talons, its toes or whatever when you put it on a wire. There are a number of simanim for a non-kosher bird, which the Rishonim and the Gaonim at least assume to some extent might be relied upon. Our tradition is that we do not, Ashkenazi tradition certainly, is that we do not eat a bird if there's no Masorah on it. Chagovim, grasshoppers, right? Have
the turkey.
What?
Except the turkey.
Turkey's kind of like a chicken. I know. So I will tell you the real question you want to ask by turkey is, okay, so if we really don't have a Masorah on turkey, but the minhag would come to eat it, you just want to make sure it actually truly is kosher. Because wild turkeys do hunt, but that in itself does not automatically render them a non-kosher bird. So there are simanim, but they're not ones that we rely upon anymore. But in principle, it seems like you could rely upon them. Grasshoppers, the Torah gives simanim. Asher lo chara'ayim imal aragloven alter bohein ala aretz. If it has certain kinds of legs to hop, and Chazal understand that it has to have four wings and four legs, and the wings cover a majority of the body. So again, Ashkenazim certainly don't eat grasshoppers without a misaru, and Ashkenazim as a general don't eat grasshoppers. But Taimanim still eat grasshoppers, they have a misaru. I think it's also very clear, I know there's some would say otherwise, it's very clear that you can rely upon the Taimanim misaru if you want to eat those. You don't have, it doesn't have to be your personal misaru. Fish, the Torah gives simanim, snapir and kaskesas, the fins and scales. And that's basically, that's the lineup. But when it comes to, let's say, eggs of a bird, and you just and all you see is the eggs, can you assume that they're kosher or not? So the Gemara gives simanim. The Gemara in Chulin happens to say that simanim lav deoraisa, that the simanim are not midoraisa. It means that the Chachamim sort of looked at them and said these are the general rules, but on that basis alone, you might not be able to rely upon the eggs being kosher. I didn't have a chance to look in the Shulchan Aruch, but if I'm not mistaken, the Tor quotes the Rishonim who say our practice is because basically nobody sells non-kosher eggs. So already in Ashkenaz, their practice was they would purchase eggs from a non-Jew even without having anything. I mean, they looked like chicken eggs, and they look could have been chicken eggs. They had perhaps the right shape. And they purchased them because you knew it was eggs from a tarnagolas. I didn't check if the Shulchan Aruch just says that's accepted. I assume that's probably the practice today, which is, while I'm sure that somebody sticks an OU on a box of eggs, probably one doesn't need a hashgach on eggs. But, yes. Yeah.
So I know that there are certain species of duck that are not permissible. I'm wondering how it's possible, like something...
That it's not permissible?
Yes.
On what grounds?
I'm not sure.
I don't, you know, duck is not my usual, my food, so I don't know. I can't imagine why. In other words, once it's genuinely a species of duck, I presume it also does not have the that will have the simanim of a kosher bird. I assume the other varieties of duck. So why anybody would say that, I don't know. No idea.
May I ask a sociological question? You seem to be such strange things that the rabbis are dealing with. What was the dearth of food? They had to deal with all of these strange kinds of sources for food.
So I suspect that, you know, we live in an unusual society today where at least, you know, there's certainly a lot of hunger even in this country, but there's not a lack of food. It's a problem of getting the food to the people that need it. But I think that we live in a unique experience in human history. We might be the only generation or last couple of generations who never actually worried about their food supply, even when, you know, things are going bad with the bees or whatever else and pollinating, so you get something else. Maybe people who lived through World War II might remember, maybe there was food rationing then, but since then, basically, there's been an unbelievable surplus of food, but that reality wasn't always the case. I think people, any food source that you could get your hands on was something potentially you would want. And so I think that it's not unusual they're asking these questions. That's what I would think. So the Gemara in Chulin, what?
Muscovy duck is the duck that...
Muscovy duck.
Anyway.
Okay.
Sorry.
I cannot imagine why, but, you know...
Maybe it's not a duck.
There are a lot of articles about it. It's actually not there.
From what I know, is if it walks like a duck, and it talks like a duck, and it quacks like a duck, it's a duck.
There's no Masara. Some rabbi in 1860 in New Orleans, Rabbi Bowie, came and said it's not kosher. Whatever.
Okay.
Kiryas Sotol asserted in 2010. Yes, the Muscovy duck is an issue. I agree.
Okay. Fine. Answered your question. I have no idea why. But the Gemara does say, the Gemara says that in principle, the simanim of beitzim are not midoraisa. So the question one might ask, as Tosos does, why didn't the Gemara answer that here? The Gemara wanted to know, the Rav had said you only can buy ubre dagim, according to one teretz, from a mumcha. Why not just look at the simanim? And the Gemara had to answer, kishini moch, why not say, simanim lav doraisa? And if that is the only basis on which you're purchasing the eggs, that's not okay. You need something else with it, and something else to support the contention of these are kosher eggs, not just to look at the eggs and say, they are the right shape. So Tosus here, and this is really a machlokas harishonim, Tosus writes the following. Tema, the last Tosus on the page. Tema, amaylo mishani kasavar simane ubari dagim lav doraisa. Why did the Gemara just answer that simanim of ubre dagim are not minat Torah? It's only sort of a rabbinic rule, give you general guidance, and therefore the lakach ain livdok besimanim. Therefore, you can't rely upon the simanim alone. You need something else. Dehachinami Mishani Perik Elu Trefos. The Gemara gives that answer in Chulin. Gabi Simani Beitzim Dalav Daraisa Nenu. The Kaparach. The Gemara asks for Livdok Besimani Mishani Simani Beitzim La Midaraisa. In a kitchen situation where you have a bona fide suffix, the Gemara said you can't rely upon the Simani Beitzim. So for Omer Rabbeinu Tam, based upon the fact, the argumento excellent silento, the argument from silence, the Gemara doesn't give this answer. But Omer Rabbeinu Tam, the Shmami Namehacha, you can infer from this, Simane Ubore Dagim Ta Oraisa, that the Simanim of Ubore Dagim, if they fit the shape, are in fact Minat Torah. Velakach, Yesh Lahatir Haburbutash. What is a burbutash? So this was not an easy to find, but apparently it's a species of catfish. Yeah, if you look up, I think barbut, B-A-R-B-U-T, in Hebrew, at least. I don't remember if there's any English equivalent. I think English, it's a fish, it's a kosher fish. But in Hebrew, barbut, modern Hebrew at least, is I believe this. It's not called catfish, but it's one of the species of catfish. I can't remember the name. So that's what they're talking about. Rabbeinu Tam says that's why it should be permitted on the basis of the shape of the ubrei dagim, of its caviar, of its eggs. Now, one thing that should be stated at the outset, it's amply clear to me, and disturbingly so, that they were eating this in medieval Ashkenaz. They were eating catfish, it would appear. It's disturbing on two levels. Number one, if you ever looked at a catfish, it's very disturbing. Number two, that's just personal. Let's just say if the fish were walking the runways, the catfish wouldn't be nominated as one of the models. Let's put it that way. But number two, more importantly, that's just a personal preference. And once you take off everything, you're just looking at the flesh. Catfish do not have scales. We're going to see at the end of Tosos. Tosos is going to make a comment about that when they backtrack on Rabbeinu Tam. But it is hard under any circumstances to defend the possibility of catfish being kosher. But Rabbeinu Tam's argument was based upon the shape of the eggs. So I was Googling, and Google Image is a wonderful thing, and I frankly cannot tell the difference between the shape of eggs of a catfish, of a salmon, of a trout. They're all round. They also look like they're almost like the homuncular theory. There's like one red long line and like two dots. It looks like a face. I know it's not. So kind of cute. But the bottom line is that there's no difference in the shape between, maybe Nishtanu Atfai, maybe the catfish in Europe once were different, and now their eggs have turned... You like that, Aaron.
Like the olives.
What's that? Well, the olives have gotten smaller, and the catfish eggs have gotten rounder. But be that as it may, I cannot, for the life of me, understand the difference between the various kinds of eggs. But Rabbeinu Tam says, unless we're misidentifying what the barbutash is, unless it's some, it's possible between the modern identification and the medieval identification, it's two different kinds of fish. I still can't tell the difference between the eggs, but at least if it were a different kind of fish, I wouldn't feel so bad. Well, there's another teretz at the end of Tosus that we'll see. So Tosus says, anyway, so Rabbeinu Tam says, that lakacheish lahater barbutash afal gav the ein onu motzim bohem kaskasim. We don't find scales. Why? The hayesh bohem simanim. I think it'd be simani ubrim, really. It has the simanim of the ubar of a kosher fish, and that's why it's permitted. Mihu, however, Tosus says yesh lidchos. You could say that this proof is wrong. Meaning, the argument from silence from the Gemara is a bad argument. The fact that the Gemara did not turn around and say that the simanim for fish eggs are only midrabanan, that doesn't mean that they're daraisa. The Gemara didn't give that answer for whatever reason, but it could still be true that simani ubrei dagim are in fact only drabanan. So he says yesh lidchos. You could be docha. You could push away that suggestion. La'olam emelachas simanim lav daraisa. Really, simanim dagma not minat Torah. V'hadalo shani hacha. The reason why the Gemara did not want to answer that is mishum da'kate tikshi de'eni kachan ela min amumcha. Well, from the fact that Rav said you can only purchase it from a mumcha, mashma the einshum tzad heter likach shalom in a mumcha. It sounds like the only way you could actually purchase fish eggs, if you don't take them out of the fish itself, is from a mumcha. The ein zeh, that's wrong. Now, why? So here Tosus is relying upon the Gemara on Amud Beis that we haven't gotten to yet. The im lo nimochu shasimanim nikarim, v'omer shadag ploni tahar. So if in fact it matches the simanim number one, if they weren't crushed, but rather the simanim of the eggs match that of a kosher fish, plus the guy who was an Am Haaretz, and maybe you don't really trust fully, but says, he said it's of this fish, this particular species, which you know to be a kosher species, the hashta ikatarti l'tivusa. Now you have two things working in your favor. You're not relying only upon the simanim of the Ubrei Dalkim. You're also relying upon the testimony of this merchant who says these are from a particular fish, which is a kosher species. That, which maybe you wouldn't be inclined to believe him outright, but that combined with the fact that it looks plausible because the eggs do look like they're kosher eggs of a kosher fish, the two combined together, the tarte l'tivusa, the two that work in your favor, that's enough. Avachi ha'gavna, in such a case, af shalom en ha'mumcha, nikachem af shalom en ha'mumcha. You can buy them even from someone who is not a mumcha, who is not considered, by definition, reliable. Kedamrin on hasam, as the Gemara in Chulin says, by the bird eggs, gabe beitzim, the locha mehem kish omer, shal of ploni tahar. The Gemara there says that you can buy the eggs on the basis of the simanim, when the merchant says, oh, they're from such and such a bird, which you know to be a kosher bird. Meaning, the simanim lav doraisa doesn't mean they're worthless, but it means they're insufficient, min haTorah, to permit eating the eggs. But if you have something else to support it, to buttress it, then you could, in fact, put the two together and accept it. And that's why, l'kach hutzruch l'taritz k'shinimohu. The reason why the Gemara had to give the answer to say that eggs can only be purchased from a mumcha is dafka in a situation when the eggs have been crushed. Because if the eggs hadn't been crushed, there would be another scenario which they could be purchased. Namely, if they seem on a match and the person tells you they were from a particular fish. And therefore, the Gemara didn't see fit to answer. In other words, if the Gemara had answered, oh, so you can't use the simanim lav doraisa, that would basically be suggesting that in fact the only time you can purchase fish eggs was on the testimony of a mumcha, even if the eggs weren't crushed, and that's not true. Because if you have something else to support it, then you could purchase those eggs. But once the eggs have been pulverized, so then the only way to purchase those eggs are min a mumcha. Only on the testimony of the guy who says, shall dug ploni v'taharhu, that would be insufficient. Kach dik pekri. So the re disagrees with Rabbeinu Tam, his uncle, and says that in fact it may very well be that fish, the simanim for fish eggs, are also only made the rabbanon, just like the bird eggs. So now Tosus asks the question, v'im tomar da'akati la'milsa psiktahi, but that doesn't work still, because it's still not an absolute rule. The ha'im amar ani malachtim neman af shalom in amumcha. The whole argument here is based upon the assumption that if Rav were to say that you can only buy something from a mumcha, it means under a given set of circumstances that is the only way. But Tosfos says that that's not true anyway. Why? Because the Gemara later on Daf Mem Amud Beis is going to say that if the guy tells you, not that they're from such a fish, he says, I salted the fish, I took the eggs out myself, then Tosfos says, he's Neman, even if it's Shalom in a mumcha, even if it's Nimochu. So at the end of the day, it's still not a milsa psikta, that when the eggs were nimochu, the only way to buy it is from a mumcha, so my whole line of reasoning and analyzing the sugya doesn't work. In other words, it's not exhaustive, so everything kind of falls apart. So Tosfos says, no, v'yei shlomar d'davazesh l'shchiach b'ro mochrim shiu b'shas malicha. Tosfos says, the Gemara doesn't, even though technically that would be a way around needing a mumcha for the eggs, because it's such an unusual occurrence, the Gemara doesn't really consider that. The normal situation is when a merchant has purchased stuff, he's not the processor. So he buys the eggs from someone, he was told maybe it comes from such and such a fish. The idea that he himself processed the eggs, that's extremely unlikely. So if in fact that happened, we might believe him, even though he's not a mumcha. But the Gemara doesn't have to worry about it in terms of its discussion. Okay, so right now we're still in a holding pattern. But now comes along, Rabbeinu Yehuda, Hiksha al Perish Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Yehuda had a very good question against Rabbeinu Tam's interpretation. Look at the Braiser for a moment. The Braiser says, Kisimani Beitzim, Kach Simani Dagim. And we say that Kisimani Beitzim, Kach Simani Beitzei Dagim. Just as the simanim for a bird's egg, so too are the simanim for a fish's egg. If it looks, it has the shape of a certain shape, a bird's egg is kosher, so too by a fish egg. So you don't even have to read the continuation to realize what Rabbeinu Yehuda's question is against Rabbeinu Tam. Beitzei, the simanim of beitzim of birds are midrabanan. If Rabbeinu Tam is correct that the simanim of the beitzim of fish are midoraisa, isn't it a little bit odd to say that the simanim of fish eggs are like the simanim of bird eggs? So that's what Rabbeinu Yehuda asks. Hikshal peish Rabbeinu Tam, The isimane dogim ubre dogim de oraisa im kain politanya bidelotanya. Right, you're taking the unknown, and you're taking the known, and you're attributing it to the unknown. This expression tali tanya bidlo tanya is an expression that's used in three places in Shas. Every time the Gemara asks the question, it says tali tanya bidlo tanya, meaning you're putting the cart before the horse. You're telling me that the din is A because of din B, where A is already a given, but B is not a given. So everything is backwards. So how could the Gemara say that the simanim of beitzim of fish are like the simanim of the beitzim of birds, when in fact the simanim of beitzim of fish are midaraisa, if Rabbeinu Tam is correct, yet the simanim of the beitzim of birds are only midarabanan? The Od Hiksham in HaYushalmi de Pirkin. He also quotes a raya against Rabbeinu Tam from the Yushalmi in our parak. Nasan Barava Amar Kame Shmuel. Nasan Barava said the following in the presence of Shmuel. Yoda'ana, I know mefarsha bein ubre dagim tamim and ubre dagim tahorim. I can tell the difference between kosher fish eggs and non-kosher fish eggs. Ubre dagim tamim agulim, ubre dagim tahorim aruchim. So the non-kosher fish eggs are round, the kosher fish eggs are long. Chamei le hadas slafusa. He showed him a particular kind of fish. Amar le kazemahu. And he says to him, what is this? Perush. Tosus explains, what are the words of the Yushalmi mean? Hera lo uber shel dog tahar. He shows Nasan Barava the eggs of a kosher fish. The Amar le tame. And he said, these are not kosher. He was wrong, because they were round. So Amar le, Shmuel says to him the following. Lo bishli, I'm not bothered by the fact, I'm not upset. The Amris al tahar tame. That you are declaring a kosher fish not kosher, I don't see it as such a big deal. Ella sof chalomar al tamei tahar. But what I know what's going to happen is you're going to find fish eggs that are long, that are exception to your rule, and you're going to declare them kosher when it's really treif. Mashma deyesh ubrei dag tamei domim l'shel tahar kamo bebeitzim de'ika de'urva de'dami leona. Apparently, raven eggs look like dove eggs. So the same way you'll have by fish that some of the eggs of non-kosher fish look like the eggs of kosher fish. Alma says Tosos at the end of the second to last line, Simanim lav da oraisa, the simanim are not minat Torah. Ve'ein lismoch al simane ubre dagim. And therefore you can't rely upon simanim of fish eggs alone without something else to support it, because simanim lav da oraisa. Mihu, however, ein lesser haburbutash. You shouldn't prohibit, I'll call it the catfish for now. It has scales in the water, but when you take it out, those scales fall off. Now, we already saw that Gemara that says that if it has and the inference they make is if it has scales and fins in the water, even if they fall out when you pull it out of the water, nonetheless, the fish is kosher. I don't know, you know, it's funny, I don't know, if you go Google, you know, does X fish have scales? Very frequently, even on non-Jewish, non-unrelated kosher websites, you see someone will say, this question is not about whether the fish is kosher. They just want to know, having to do with how you prepare it and so on, there's something about the, I don't know exactly what it is. So the bottom line is Tosus claims that the barbutash has scales, but they fall off when they come out of the water. So obviously I don't know for sure, because the people analyzing this aren't asking those questions, but as best I can tell, catfish do not have scales in or out of the water. And their eggs look just like the eggs of every other fish. So I don't know whether or not this is a case of mistaken identity on the part of Tosos, or mistaken identity on the part of the modern lexicographers, and that perhaps this is a different fish than what would be called in modern Hebrew today the barbut, which is a species, a relative or a species of catfish. So anyway, before one runs away saying that Tosos holds that catfish is permissible, I think one has to make sure that that we can actually check the old French or something like that and see what exactly this fish refers to.
Yeah. Is it within possibility for a fish to not be kosher because it doesn't have fins and scales, but the eggs are kosher?
No, because the principle is hayotze min atame tame hayotze min atar. Anything that's produced by a non-kosher animal, be it a non-kosher species, be it an animal, let's say a cow that's a treif for the milk, is not kosher. And anything that is produced by a kosher animal, I mean the right species, and it's not a treif in the case of animals, so all of its byproducts are considered permissible.
So could this be some sort of they found the eggs of this fish to look like the eggs of other kosher fish, and therefore they sort of backed up.
Well, that's what it said. In other words,
Barbuta must have had.
So again, the barbut that Tosis is talking about, it seems that Tosis is defending the minhag. That's really, we have seen this time and time over again, especially in our Masechta. I mean, it's all over Shas. Tosis is defending the communal practice. So Rabbeinu Tam came about it by arguing that since the eggs look like kosher eggs, and Simanim Daraisa, that's enough. And when other Rishonim reject this, at least about Siman Dagim, so Tosis comes with, but the barbut is permissible anyway, because it's got scales. Right, so the known in this case is that barbut is kosher. Why? Because Ashkenazi Jews were eating it. So now the question is, but why is it kosher if it looks like it's not kosher? So the answer is either we can't see, and again, the assumption, the first teretz isn't that as long as the eggs are kosher, we don't care that it doesn't have scales. The problem is that the scales weren't obvious on this barbut. So the first line of reason was it must be a kosher fish, which presumably means it has scales because the shape of the eggs. But when that fails, we say, oh, yeah, but it's got scales in the water. They fall off when it comes out.
Well, the problem with the real caviar is sturgeon, and they have a problem with the scales when it's born and the scales later on.
I don't know. I don't.
Swordfish. The problem with sturgeon is that when you try to take the scales off, you rip the skin.
Right.
That's
so,
one of the things.
That right.
So that makes it not kosher.
No, that, well, scales have to be of a certain kind. So I'm not, I have no expertise in this particular issue. But, Ms. Marshall.
Question, how do we square what we discussed last week on Lamed Tet about the need to see the head and the spine structure and the tail with, last week when we were talking about what we assumed was the flesh of the fish, we
right.
said that you need to see the head, the tail,
head,
the
shape
spine.
Of the head and the spine, yeah.
I sort of missed a turn. Where did we all of a sudden get to that when it's guts, the whole concept of meaning the head, the tail, and the spine is gone?
Oh, no. So the case of the fish guts is that an expert can look at, you know, at Kirvei Dugim and say, I can tell you what species this comes from. When the Gemara is talking about earlier about seeing the head, seeing the spine, and using those simanim of the fish, that's a situation where you don't have a mumcha there who can just look at the fish and say, as I say, betvias ayin might even be the term, look and recognize it. So that's for some. That's when you don't have an expert there. This is where you have someone as an expert, so you can look and say, I recognize this. This is part of the following fish.
So it sounds like that kind of reinforces what we were discussing last week, which is that the head and the tail thing is probably about the flesh, which is undifferentiated because you're making fillets. It may be that you remove the guts and the eggs first because those are sold separately by specialists.
Right.
And you assume the rest of the fish is gone, which is now we're saying, okay, now we're at an egg dealer or a gut dealer because
right.
it's not
that makes sense.
What you would buy. So it
I
actually
so.
Fits together.
Yeah.
This is, calling an expert is reminiscent of there was a science project by a student a couple of years ago that made the Times where they went and checked the fish in sushi and determined that some fish are not what they say they are. So
right.
how an expert do you have to be? Like genetics, DNA testing?
No, I think the part of the question is, our issue is not just, you know, we don't care on some level what species it's from. We care whether from a group of species. In other words, the kosher or not. So it may be that, you know, that there are a lot of fish that look alike are very hard to tell. It also may be that in some cases when people receive deliveries of the wrong thing, they don't care. Right. In other words, it might be to some extent if the fish are similar enough or look enough alike, it may be that the chefs don't actually care. They need fish. So, okay, if it was this tuna species this time and it's a different species that time, I don't really care. Tuna apparently is a name for a lot of different species.
Presumably in a kosher sushi place, the mashgiach or whoever it is that's running the place is checking.
Correct.
The actual
skin when it comes in, right.
Yeah, so for right. what it's worth, which is very little, kashrut.com discusses the burbot. I mean, there are a lot of Wikipedia articles about burbot. But it says that they have embedded scales like the sturgeon, and for that reason are not kosher because they can't.
Is it a catfish? Is it a relative of the catfish?
It's a mixture of actually a catfish and an eel, which actually makes it worse, not better. But it's called the only freshwater cod on Wikipedia.
Yes, I saw it. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, so the Baleatos. That's interesting, though. Anyway, so that if that's what it is, if that's what this word means, then the Baleatos seem to eat catfish and eel. Okay. Fine.
There's probably a Misora, because if it's in Louisiana, it probably is a French, the word is probably of French origin.
That could be.
Able to assume etymological consistency.
That could be. Right. So you have to just to be sure. It's still, to me, it's staggering. I'd rather not believe it. So, anyway, in the world of the base manners, we'll say, Nishtanu Atvaim. They used to have scales, and now they no longer do. Okay.
It's all yours.
What's that?
That's
I knew you'd like that. All right. So now the Gemara says, Ula Rabbi Dustai. So let's just review the structure of the sugya briefly for a second. Rav said that kirvei dagim and fish eggs, so fish guts and fish eggs can only be purchased from a mumcha. Ula had presented a stira about from the Braisa that says that there are no non-kosher fish eggs because non-kosher fish give birth to live offspring. And one answer was, you're right, why don't you take out the word fish eggs from Rav's statement? And Rav just said that fish guts are only purchased from a mumcha. Fish eggs, according to that version, could be purchased from anyone because fish eggs, by definition, would be kosher. And then the Gemara gave a second teretz, Rabbi Zeira, I think, who said that no, Rav's statement stands, fish eggs and fish guts, because even non-kosher fish have eggs, but the question of where they hatch them, inside or outside. So now the Gemara says, Rab Dustai de Mimbemi to Amar Sami Mikan Ubran. Rab Dustai was the one who said, edit Rav's statement, take out the word Ubre Dagim. Just say, Kirve Dagim, Eini Kachal Mamumcha. So Ulurab Dustai de Mimbemi to Amar Sami Mikan Ubran. He said, take out that word. The Hatanya, we have taught in Ebraisa, Kisimane Beitzim, Kach Simane Ubre Dagim. Like the simanim of eggs are the simanim of ubre dagim. Now, you recognize this brisa? We saw this brisa a few minutes ago. If the Gemara read the brisa, if you go back, turn the page back for a second. Seven lines from the bottom, near the end of the line. D'tanya, kisimane dagim, kisimane beitzim, kach simane dagim. That's the original version of the brisa. Then the Gemara said, what? Simane dagim salkadaitach? It can't be. Ella, go down a line. Simane beitzim, kach simane obre dagim. So the Gemara has edited the Braisa, and now it's turning around and asking a question from the edited version. Right? Because the Braisa didn't say, the kasha against Rav Dustai was, simane beitzim, kach simane obre dagim, which implies that they're simanim for fish eggs. And Rav Dustai said, all fish eggs are kosher. So the Gemara says, what? That's not a question. Lav terutze kametaretz islay? To be metaretz, there's an Akkadian word. The word teretz usually means an answer. So the origin of that word is an Akkadian word, which is taratzum, which means to make straight. So what we did before was we straightened out the brisa, because it didn't make sense. Kisimane beitzim kach simane dagim. So you straightened out the brisa in one way. So if that's the case, lav terutze you already straightened that out one way. Therefore, instead, taritachi. Why don't you fix the brice a different way? Which is to say, kisimane beitzim kach simane kirvei dagim. Who told you to put the word ubre in? Put the word kirvei dagim in. Okay, now, the only question is, are the simanim of kirvei dagim the same as the simanim of beitzim? The fish guts look like the shape of the eggs of kosher birds. So the Gemara says that vehechi mashkachas besimane kirvei dagim shehei kad v'chad. Where can you find an inner of the fish that is one head, one side is flat and one side is sharp, pointed? The answer is mashkachas la bishilpucha. Rashi says the fish bladder. Apparently fish bladders are shaped like this. So, if you have a fish bladder shaped like that, you know it comes from a kosher fish, if it looks like the shape of an egg. So the point anyway of the Gemara was that once you're editing the Braisa, you can edit to your heart's content. Who told you to change the version that said kisimane beitzim kach simane dagim into kisimane obre dagim? Change it into kisimane kirve dagim. So you can edit, I can edit to get around the question. Okay, fine. Now the Gemara continues. Ein sham mumcha mai. What do you do if there's no mumcha present? So, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, kevan da amar ni melach de mutar. Tosis quoted this. Rabbi Yehuda says that if the guy says, I salted the fish myself, I gutted the fish, I took this stuff out, so then you believe him. Rav Nachman amar atche yomar elu dagim ve'elu kirvehim. He actually has to say to you, he has to show you the fish themselves, and say, these are the ones that I took it out. Presumably you could then peek inside that fish, and if you don't see any fish guts, well, you don't have to match them up, you know, where the edges don't have to adjoin, you know, like a jigsaw puzzle. Nonetheless, it's plausible. Once he says, I took them out of this fish, and that fish doesn't have the guts in it anymore, it doesn't have the eggs anymore, so then, that's, the Nachman says, that's required. Orin le, Rav Yehuda la'ada dayala, kemet amar animalach de mutarim. Rav Yehuda instructed a'ada dayala, he was his shamash, he told them that it's enough if the guy says to you, animalachtim. If he says to you, animalachtim, you can rely upon that. He doesn't actually have to show you the fish out of which he took it. Okay, fine. That's the, I think we've done our duty with fish. Okay. Now the Gemara, we go back to the Mishnah. And the Mishnah, listing the things that you're allowed to eat, and we're not concerned about being non-kosher. The next item was Ola Shel Chiltus. Chiltus is Asta Fetida, that very pungent vegetable, plant, vegetable, herb, or something that was used in cooking. And if you cut it with a treif knife, so the Chiltus took the absorptions of the knife, and even if they were, and it made them, it basically permeates the asta fetida, permeates the chiltis. So the what's that? Asta fetida.
Asta
fetida. I'm sorry. Asta fetida. So as you can see, it's not a regular ingredient in my kitchen. So the chiltis, the first Mishnah had said you can't eat chiltis, koret shel chiltis, the actual nodules. However, what about the leaves? So our Mishnah said the ola you're allowed to eat the leaves. So pshita, of course, why would you think so? The leaves aren't sharp. What's the big deal? So the Gemara says lo nitzrucha el kreten shabo. If there are the little nodules hanging on it, then mahu detem, I would have thought nechesh dilma ma'isim arabe kamash malan. You might think that the guy might mix in other of the korets and throw them in there, those that were cut with a knife. So it tells us, if he gave it to you, let's say, in a bag or a container, and you find these little korets shelchiltis, these little, I guess, nodules, I'm not sure what you want to call them, bulbs, not quite. So if you find them, you can assume that they fell off the leaf. You don't have to assume that he cut them separately and threw them into the container. Fine. Next, v'zeisei gluskos hamagugalim. If you have very ripe olives that are meant for pressing, so pshita, why would you think that they're not kosher? So the Gemara says, lo nitzricha afal gav derafei tuva. Even if they are very, very soft, why would you think if the olives are very soft that they're not kosher? Mahu detema chamra remabahu. He threw wine in them in order to cause them to start to ferment, to soften, and so on. So kamash malan hani mechamas mishchahu derafu. It's because they're so full of oil that they are so soft at this point. V'Rabbi Yose Omer shlachim asurim. He says that he uses the term shlachim. Shlachim means literally to send away. What is? Why are they asur? What are they? So heichidami shlachim. What kind of olives would be in this category? If you pick up the olive and you do almost nothing and the pitch just oozes out almost, it means the olives are so soft that Rabbi Yose was concerned that he sort of sprinkled it with wine to help along the ripening process. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Hachagavim Habaim. The Mishnah said, "Chagavim habayim min aslula asurin min aheftek mutarim." The slula is the basket, the grasshoppers, the basket of grasshoppers that he has in front of him, that he's selling them, a few at a time out of the basket. The heftek is the storage room. So the assumption that we work with until now, correct assumption, is that when it comes out of the basket that he's selling in the store, which he usually sells within a day or two, He's going to sprinkle wine on them to make it smell good, and he's not concerned about spoilage because they're going to be sold in short order. But he's not going to go to a barrel in the back room, a barrel in the storehouse, and put wine in there because it's going to cause the grasshoppers to spoil before he'll be able to sell them. So the Gemara says, Hachagavim Tanu Rabbanan. We have a brisa. Hachagavim v'hakafrisin v'hakaplutos. Hachagavim are grasshoppers. Kafrisin are caper berries, and kaplutos are leeks. These are all places where they would have been stored. Mutarim. They're mutar because you're not concerned the guy is going to sprinkle wine on them to make them smell good. However, bikatluza, which means in the shuk, in the market, in the store, asur mneshim arvim bo yayin. They mix wine into it. Tana Rabbanon. Pam achas chosh Rebbe Memeyav. Rebbe had a stomach problems. Omar klumiyesh adam sheyodea yein tapuchim shel odei kochavim aser o mutar. Is there anybody who knows whether apple cider, apple wine, of non-Jews is kosher? I mean, was any reason to be concerned, I guess, about wine or something like that being mixed in? Amar lefanav Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yose, his contemporary Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yose said to him, "Pam achas chosh abba b'meav." My father, who was Rabbi Yose, had a similar problem. Ve'vi lo yein tapuchim shel ovdei kochavim shel ayin shana. They brought to him apple wine of a non-Jew which had been aged for 70 years, v'shasa v'nisrape, and he drank it and he was healed. That must have been some very interesting apple wine. I'm sure it could kill a lot of things in the B'nai Me'ayim. 70-year-old
Scotch, think of that.
I don't know. It doesn't... how different is 70-year-old Scotch from 7-year-old Scotch? Very different.
If it's refuah,
I've never had 7-year-old Scotch.
If it's a medicine, is it...
It would have to be... No, if it were... If you assume that you're dealing with Yai Nesa, then it wouldn't be permissible unless it was a sakana. And even it's not clear whether he would have permitted something that stam yenam just because he was chash b'meav. He's just uncomfortable. It doesn't mean he was dying. So pamachas chash ba'aba b'meav v'heviu lo yein tapukas lo chacham shalayin shana v'shasa v'nisrabe. He drank it. Amar lo kol kachaya b'yot chavata mitzareni, which is, I don't understand this. You've had this in your hands the whole time and you're causing me such pain. Why did you tell me this until now? Just kind of like, the answer is because you didn't ask. Okay. They found one guy who actually 300 barrels of 70-year-old apple wine. And then Vishasa, Rebbe drank it. I assume he didn't drink all of it. I assume he just had from one bottle. Because I'm sure it would have, if he drank all of it, it would have also, he wouldn't have felt the stomach pains anymore. Other problem, but not that one. Then Isrape. And his Amar, Rebbe responded, Baruch HaMakom Shemasar Olamo L'Shomrim. I don't really understand this line, but blessed is the is God who gave over his world to the preservers. I guess he meant the people who preserved
the wine.
Yeah, I would have said the Mesharmim preserved the wine for so long. Thank God. Okay. Fine. V'chein L'Truma. Samai v'chein l'truma. The Mishnah said that chagavim haboim min ha'slula are asurim, min ha'heftek are mutarim. And then v'chein b'truma. What does truma have to do with anything? Why would... The Mishnah said that grasshoppers that are taken from the basket in the store are no good if it's from a guy because we're afraid he sprinkled wine on it. From the storehouse, they are permissible. So the question... Then the Mishnah says, the last words, v'chein l'truma. Same thing by truma. What does truma have to do with anything? In other words, presumably a guy doesn't have truma. It's not that a guy couldn't have truma. You can sell truma. A kohen can sell truma. Or if the Israelites come into possession, he can sell it. But you wouldn't sell it normally to a guy. A guy's going to make it tame. So what does it mean, v'chein l'truma? So the Gemara says the following. My v'chein l'truma. Amar Rav Sheshes. V'chein l'kohen ha'chotcher limchor truma l'shem chulin. If there's a guy who is suspect of selling truma under the guise of chulin. Lefanav hu da'asur, you're not allowed to buy from the stuff that's in the store, in the baskets. If he says to you, this is chulin, you can't trust him. Aval habam min ha'otzer min ha'heftek min ha'slula mutar. But if he's taking it from the storehouse, you're allowed to buy it if he tells you it's not truma. Why? This has nothing to do with mixing in yayin or anything else. The reason is because irtuse mirtas. He's scared. He doesn't want to commit fraud. You know, what happens when you commit a crime with a particular thing? What do? They may confiscate the thing. So if he lies about a basket of truma in the store and calls it chulin and he gets caught, so they may find him by taking the basket and making it hefker. But not a great loss. But he says, Savar Shami Be Rabbanan, if he does it to the stuff in the storehouse, he's afraid the Chachamim are going to find out. And Umasti Dilaminari, Rashi says, Yafkir Afkiras Kala Otsar. They're going to declare the entire Otsar of what is actually truma hefker, and he's going to lose a lot of money. Therefore, you know, it's sort of like if you're, you know, with the laws of civil forfeiture, here's a good piece of advice. If you're going to go commit a crime, drive your Honda Fit, not your Ferrari. Because if they catch you while doing it, so they'll seize your car. So better they seize the Honda Fit. So that's basically what the Kohen is engaged in here. We don't trust him on the stuff in the store because the finite potential loss, the risk-reward ratio, it works in his favor. But the stuff that's in the storehouse, the risk-reward ratio does not work in his favor, and that's why he is Neman, Mina Haba, Mina Otsar, Mina Heftek, Umina Slula. Hadron Alach Ein Mamidin. Okay. Let's just read the next Mishnah, and we'll conclude today with that. We are changing topics totally. For the last half a perek, we have been dealing with Machale Akum, which is actually a very halacha lemaisa issue. The foods, various kinds of foods produced by non-Jews, and the various concerns that associate with it. Now we are actually moving into Avodah Zarah itself and the prohibition of getting hana, and determining whether or not, let's say, the first Mishnah is about determining whether statues that are found, whether we assume that they're Aser B'Hana or not. So it is going to be less nitty-gritty in many ways, and it can be more conceptual. Be that as it may, the Mishnah says the following. Kol Hatzlamim Asurim, all images, all graven images that are found, Asurim are prohibited. You're not allowed to get any hana. Mimnei shehein ne'avadim pamach aspashana divi Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says because they are worshipped once a year.
At least once a year.
But they are worshipped once a year. The truth is, it doesn't even have to be worshipped once a year. Really, once in a lifetime is enough, unless the guy nullifies it, which is a topic we will eventually explore. But Rameir says they are worshipped at least once on an annual basis, and therefore, if the Avodah Zarah itself, if the object is worshipped, then it is Asur, as all Avodah Zarah is Asur, which is Velo Savi So'eva El Beisecha V'ho Yisach Kherim Kamohu Shaketz Shaketzenu. That you're not allowed to bring an abomination into your house, which refers to the idols in the previous pasuk. Rather, you have to destroy it, you have to regard it as disgusting, and keep it away from you. Okay. It's not all images are assumed to be permissible, all statues, unless if the statue has in its hand a rod, a bird, or a sphere, then it's Asur. Presumably the Chachamim believe that only these things are the ones that are worshipped. One of the interesting things, we will see the Gemara, God willing, I think in 2 weeks from now, next week will be a special topic, but when we see the Gemara will give an explanation for Kadur, but I think this explanation for Kadur is actually very simple. The reason why you know it's worshipped is because what does it have in its hands? It's got the whole world in its hands. It has dominion over the world. That you only realize that if you think that the world is a sphere, which I'm not sure that Chazal did, which is, I think, why they actually didn't offer that interpretation. They will offer a different interpretation. The din is the same. The din would be correct in this case. The only question would be whether the reason is correct or not. Okay. But be that as it may, the Chachamim say that only these things are a simon. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Af Kol Sheyesh B'Yado Kol Davar. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says, no, doesn't matter what it has, if it's holding something in its hand, the Braisa will say, even if it's holding a splinter of wood in its hand, that also is a sign somehow that the animal, that the idol, that the statue is worshipped.
These are
tzlamim. I know that the Yiddish meaning of the word tzelem, specifically a crucifix, or a cross, depend. In the time of the Mishnah, it means an image that very possibly been worshipped. So we'll explore, God willing, in 2 weeks, what exactly is the machlokas amongst the Tanaim, and some issues that are, at least from a larger perspective, very, very theoretically, very important. Okay.